Die Woods of Burnham mit Shakespeare-Verweis im Bandnamen Closer heißt das Stückchen, das wir gerade abspielen durften. Und mein nächster Gast hat es doch ins Studio geschafft. Wir können also über den neuesten Roman von Emma Jane Unsworth, der im Deutschen Biester heißt, sprechen. Da geht's um zwei Damen, um Laura und um Tyler, die befreundet sind. Beide sind um die 30 und beide leben ein unstetes, ja man möchte fast sagen, wildes Leben. Laura arbeitet in einem Callcenter, will aber einen Roman fertig schreiben. Tyler unterlässt nichts, um Laura eben davon abzuhalten, ihr Leben auf die Reihe zu kriegen. Da wird ordentlich sabotiert. Und aus dem Roman, der im Englischen Animals und der auf Deutsch Biester heißt, wird Emma Jane Unsworth heute Abend lesen. Ort des Geschehens ist der Pavillon der Volksbühne am Rosa-Luxemburg-Platz. Der Eintritt ist heute Abend frei und es gibt auch was zu trinken bei dieser Lesung. Das ist relativ wichtig bei diesem Thema. Bei mir im Studio ist jetzt Emma Jane Unsworth. Sie hat es geschafft. Hello and welcome to Flux FM, Emma.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Easy, how are you doing? Where are you coming from today? You're
very
a bit late.
I know, I'm so sorry. First time in Berlin, so completely miscalculated and got lost.
Yeah.
So yeah, totally
it doesn't
sorry.
Matter too much.
So yeah, it's the first time I've been to Berlin, which I'm kind of slightly embarrassed about actually. I feel like I should have been to Berlin
yeah,
before.
Yeah, I thought everyone's... you have been here
no,
already.
No, this is the first time. So yeah, it's all new. I just got here today, so
yeah, okay.
I'm here till Saturday, so
cool.
Should be a good trip.
Yeah, I think so too. And now you're perfectly excused for being a bit late. I mean, if it's your first time.
Flattery will get me over
it. It's typical German, though. Just start the interview with like, hello, Emma, you're late. Did you know that? So are you looking forward to presenting your book to a Berlin audience? Because I have the feeling that the story, the plot could take place in Berlin, too. I have the feeling that there's girls / women
the world over.
Yeah,
maybe. I like to think so. The book takes place in Manchester, which is kind of the city I grew up in and that I know in the north of England. But the story is about two women who, one of them is 29, one's 32, and they are still going out wilding it around the town. And they're kind of feeling, well, certainly the narrator is starting to feel like she should maybe be calming down. You know, you kind of get to that age where everyone says, you know, shouldn't the party be over now? But she's kind of kicking against that and her best friend is encouraging her.
Yeah. And there's a feministic approach to partying hard, I think. Shimmers through the story that you've told.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, maybe not just in the sheer partying, but certainly in the idea that as a woman that you should be doing certain things by a certain age and, you know, by that rule, you shouldn't be doing other things either. And I think, yeah, Laura feels pressured to get married, pressured to have a baby, pressured to do all these things that as a woman you're told will give your life more value by society, and therefore if you don't do them you kind of feel like a bit of a failure, which is completely wrong, and I hate that, and I you know, kick against that. That is definitely those are my politics.
It's your voice. Talking to Laura.
I'm sure. Well, certainly in some of her politics.
So what's the main reason for the protagonist to party and drink so hard from your point of view?
Because they think it's loads of fun, because they have a great time, and crucially because it's recreational what they do. They are not addicts. They're not alcoholics. They overdo it regularly, but they don't have a problem. And that's something that I kind of feel is worth exploring as well, because I think there's a whole load of judgment poured onto people, especially women, for doing certain things. It's the idea of the sort of the tragic woman, you know, who's still going out in her 40s and 50s, and you know, the idea of the woman who just isn't quite right. And I hate that. I think people should be free to live the life they want to live.
And it's totally hateable, the perfect healthy lifestyle that everyone wants to go for now.
I think I hate that too.
Yeah. I mean, why just eat apples all day and not smoke and never drink? I mean, where's the fun of all it?
I know. I mean, kale's great, but you can have too much kale. Yeah. You need some wine in your life as well.
Yeah, totally. I'm totally agreeing with you on that. And what I found interesting is that Tyler and Laura, they refuse to become women in the old school sense of the word. They're trying to stay girls, kind of.
There is the idea of sort of protracted adolescence, which I think, you know, is an interesting thing to explore as well with, like, you know, Lena Dunham's Girls, and there's lots of kind of fictionalized versions of women who are in the late 20s, early 30s at the moment, who are still behaving like, you know, you'd think teenagers would behave. I think that's maybe because women have more options these days, but I think the sense of judgment is still there. And that's kind of what I wanted to look at, because my narrator isn't just kind of having a glorious hedonistic time. She worries. She's an anxious person. Yeah. And she does have the kind of the moments of thinking, oh God, you know, am I a complete loser?
But the phenomenon of refusing to grow up is a modern day phenomenon, I think. And it happens to men as well.
Absolutely. 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 And yeah, I do get that. But I just think, what does it mean? What does that mean? What does growing up actually mean? Does it mean you've got a mortgage? Does it mean you've got a kid? Does it mean you get married? Does it mean you know how to use a cafetiere? You know, what does it mean? Yeah. Does it mean you know how to get on the bus? I mean, kind of, you know, I struggle with all of those things. So I don't know. I think until we can do something, we need to know what it actually means, surely.
Yeah, sure. And while thinking about that, you were thinking about moral questions as well. And you were kind of inventing a new moral for a modern day woman or a modern day girl, I think, right?
Ooh, thanks. Yeah, I mean, they certainly have those kind of deep and meaningful conversations in the early hours where they kind of go through their philosophies and try and work stuff out.
They're totally in love with poems and poetry.
Yeah, they love poetry and they're quite pretentious. And, you know, because that was fun to write, and it's a farce in many ways. It's a comedy.
Yeah.
So these girls had to be extreme and not always likeable. Which I think is quite interesting as well, because there's this whole argument about having to make your characters likable.
Yeah.
You know, would we want to be friends with the people that we're reading about or that we're writing about? And I think, you know, there's more pressure on women to write likable characters as well, I think.
Sure.
You know,
I think as long as it's understandable what those people, what the protagonists in a book or in a film do, that's good enough for me. You know, I loved watching Dexter, the guy who kills everybody.
Yeah, oh my God, he's not
the most likable guy.
Exactly.
Because he's not friendly to people.
No.
He's grumpy and he's killing everyone.
But he's charming with it.
And
more to the point, he's believable.
Yeah,
I think that's the thing. If it's convincing, if you set up a world and create characters within it that you can believe in and be carried along by, why does it matter whether you like them or not?
Yeah, that's totally true. That's the reality part of the fictional reality part of a good work.
It'd be super boring if we just surrounded ourselves with people and things and art and books and everything that completely, you know, was in tune with our own politics and everything. That'd be so boring.
Yeah, no, they might be close to the fascist regime, kind of, you know, if we'd be surrounded
Absolutely, you're just brainwashing yourself if you do that.
Totally.
I think you've got to challenge yourself.
Yeah, I love the way that you use headings to build up tension or suspense, maybe even. And I was reminded of the famous Berlin Alexanderplatz novel by Alfred Döblin, a German novel that takes place in the 20s, because he did that as well. He uses headings that make you know what's going to happen next, but it doesn't explain how it's happening.
I like that. It's just like a little tantalizing.
Yes, totally interesting. Did you write the chapters and then invent the heading, or did you sometimes have the heading and then went on from there?
Oh, that's interesting. I've not been asked about that before. I think mostly I came up with the chapter headings after I'd written the chapter.
Sure.
But my reasons for doing it were partly as a little intriguing thing, but also, you know, like the great picaresque novels like Don Quixote and those adventure stories.
Yes.
And I like those, you know, and they all have those sort of chapter headings. There's one in Animals where it's our hero finds herself, you know, asleep under a bush after an inspiring encounter, which is very daft.
Yeah.
But I think it's exactly
like the Berlin Alexanderplatz, because he always talks about unser Held as well, which is our hero in German.
That's really
funny.
Yeah, so I like that. And I did want to kind of nod to those picaresque, those roguish novels of old.
Yeah, sure.
Where you had a character who was going through various episodes of adventure and experience and finding out new things about themselves and the world.
It's a super trick to keep people reading, because I think as soon as you've read the heading for the next chapter, you'd be like, oh, how does she get under the bush? And why is she as drunk as fuck? You know what I'm saying? How did that happen?
Yeah, maybe she is a loser.
Now, before we talk a bit more, let's listen to some music. This is a song that fits the topic, kind of. It's Velvet Underground with the Sweet Jane. Well, Velvet Underground mit Sweet Jane auf Lux FM. Vielleicht ein Stück für den Soundtrack zum Film Animals oder zum Film Biester, wie er ja im Deutschen dann heißen würde. It must be kind of like strange to get the translated version of your book back.
Yeah, it is, and but it's great too.
I mean, you've just told me that you studied German when you were in school.
That's right, yeah.
And you probably understand a little bit.
Bits and bobs, yeah. But then again, I do know it quite well, so I'm sort of cheating a bit. But it was ace to get like the finished object, because the cover is obviously different to the UK version. And it's just great to see a different sort of interpretation of it, really.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful with the hardback and stuff, yeah.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Like, I think, yeah. A great job.
Yeah, and it smells good. That's an important thing as
do,
well.
They always do, don't they? Yes. Yeah.
Now, we've just played Velvet Underground, and I said that this might be a song for the soundtrack to the movie Animals. And I've found out today that you're basically working on a screenplay for that book that we've just presented, or that we're presenting right now.
Yeah.
And I've read that it's kind of hard for you to work on the screenplay, because you have to all your darlings. You have to reduce the whole thing to a screenplay that makes a 1.5-hour movie.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
From something that takes 7 hours to read. I mean, it's not the longest book in the world, but it's still to kind of reduce it to an hour and a half movie is really tough. And but I'm working with some great people. I've got great producer called Sarah Brocklehurst. And then there's the BFI have given us some development funding and the British Film Institute. And I'm working with a great lady from there, a mentor. And so she's kind of like, you know, putting me through my paces. So when I try and get away with saying things like, oh, they just go out for dinner that night, she'll say, why do they go out for dinner? I'll say, because it's a Friday and people need to eat. And she'll say, no, there needs to be like a plot reason. Single little thing. Everything's got to be so tightly knitted and plotted, and you can't get away with anything. So
it must be inspiring, maybe for the next book or something, because it makes you look at your own work through a microscope, kind of, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's kind of broken through a lot of kind of my illusions about, you know, how hard it actually is, because I thought to write a screenplay, it would just be a case of dialogue. And I love writing dialogue. It's one of my favorite things. So I was like, oh, it's just, you know, surely it's just that. It's so tricky to get it right. So it's tough, but I'm gonna have a go and see how I get on, you know, and hopefully early next year I'll have a first draft ready.
All right, see, but I think it's gonna be a movie sooner or later, because if the BFI is giving you funds for it to put it,
maybe,
to make it,
I mean,
into a screenplay.
It's in development. It's a long road though. It's a very long road, but we're on it, so we'll see. Fingers crossed.
Sounds good to me. I've also found out today that you're already working on novel number 3, which is going to be about a woman who has ruined her life on one mad night on MDMA.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
As you do.
How does that all fit together? I was thinking of Animals being the start of a angry women's trilogy, maybe, or something like that.
Not by intention. I think what I wanted to look at in this book, the new book, is obsession more than anything. And so I'm looking at a woman at two points in her life. There are two timelines, her at 35, which is when she's ruined her life with a mad night, and then her at 15, and maybe how sort of her 15-year-old self, who is completely obsessive, and but at the same time, you know, on that cusp of adulthood, because I think it's really interesting looking at that age of you know, all people, but I'm looking at it about women, and kind of like, say, at what point do you actually become an adult? At what point, you know, do you mature? And, you know, all that sort of, all that longing and desire and your burgeoning sexuality and kind of the safe places to put that, and then, you know, how does that affect the person that you eventually become 20 years down the line?
Yeah.
And
but
so
that's a topic that reappears then, actually, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I don't know whether it's because I just turned 35, and so I'm just sort of, I've started to think about, you know, I've started to become more nostalgic and think about my life in terms of 10-year blocks. But I've been thinking a lot about my teenage self and teenage girls at the moment, and so that's what I ended up writing about.
Yeah, cool. That sounds interesting to me. And as soon as you finish that book, you can visit us again. We can talk about that
too. Thank you. I'd love to.
So I want to wish you the best of luck for tonight's reading. I don't know exactly how it's going to work. Are you going to read your parts in English and then the translator is going for her part? And that might be interesting, actually.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm going to do a couple of readings and then we're going to talk a little bit about the book. And Gesine, who translated the book, is going to ask me some questions. And we're going to talk a little bit about the translation process, which was so interesting.
Yeah,
so it'd be good to meet her, because we just emailed each other lots when she was translating the book. So now we meet, and can talk about that and all the times that she said, what the hell does this mean? What does this mean? What does fanny gallops mean? Yeah. And so I had to sort of try
it's so cool that you, none of you got lost in translation. It's all there. It's translated.
Oh, good. Oh, yeah. Well, she seemed like she was doing an excellent job. So yeah, I'm sure.
Okay, cool. So I want to wish you the best of luck for tonight and for the next novel as well. And as soon as you finish the next one, you just visit us again. Or if, as soon as the film is finished, you come and visit us and tell us about your Hollywood experiences and stuff.
Oh, wow. I'd love to. Okay. Dankeschön.
Gerne. Mach's gut. Ciao. Und heute Abend kann man sich im Bux, dem Pavillon der Volksbühne am Rosa-Luxemburg-Platz, die Lesung reinziehen. Los geht's um 20 Uhr. Der Eintritt ist frei und zu trinken gibt's auch was, und zwar für Umme. There's drinks for free tonight. That's what I just found out. This, I mean, that fits the whole thing. Cool, also heute Abend ab 20 Uhr im Pavillon der Volksbühne am Rosa-Luxemburg-Platz. Da geht's los mit der Lesung von Gemma, von Emma Unsworth und ihrem Stückchen Animals. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye, thank you.